Ah, yes, back in White Plains. Don't know about you, but I was starting to kind of miss the Colonel. Matt Mittler here, with Kaufman's Holiday, Part 3, A Beacon of Light. Will there be light, now that we've left the tunnel? Possibly, but I bet there'll be plenty of darkness first. Otherwise, this wouldn't be Sunday Night Noir. So let's get episode 11 started, shall we? With chapter 66. Kaufman was eating toast, but it could have been cardboard. The Rebbe suddenly appeared beside him.
"Come,"
he said, and led off into the forest. They walked in silence. Would this morning be another test by thorns? Kaufman trudged along. After a while, the Rebbe stopped and stooped over a bed of mushrooms. He lifted one carefully from the soil.
"You know, some mushrooms have root systems that join each to the other over vast areas, miles even. And all we see are little domed caps. Little kappas."
He stepped toward Kaufman.
"What a fragile organism. Look, Mr. Kaufman, what can you tell me about it?"
"I don't know much about mushrooms."
"And why should you? It's not your field of study. But you must have intuition, perhaps, even about mushrooms."
The corners of his thick blue lips turned upward.
"Now, if I were to ask you if this mushroom were safe, what would you say?"
"I'd say don't eat it."
"But if you needed to know, you would have to find out."
Kaufman spread his hands.
"Well, I sure as hell wouldn't taste it, if that's what you're getting at."
The Rebbe shook his head.
"No, that would be foolish. But you would need verification, facts, data, to know the truth about this particular Basidium mycete."
He held the mushroom up to his nose and inhaled deeply. Then he looked straight into Kaufman's eyes and took a bite.
"But sometimes, Mr. Kaufman, truth can be deadly."
He twirled the mushroom between his fingers.
"Boom,"
he whispered, and let it fall to the ground.
"That particular variety is only mildly toxic," the Rebbe added. "But do not be alarmed, Mr. Kaufman. Poison can also be curative. It all depends on the dosage."
Kaufman's skin was starting to itch.
"You sure know your mushrooms?"
"Plants, yes. Plants I know well. Alas, that is the extent of my knowledge. Botany does have its limitations."
"Botany?"
Kaufman's face tightened like he'd tasted a sour drop.
"I thought you were a scientist, some sort of missile expert."
The Rebbe turned away and continued to walk deeper into the forest. Kaufman followed.
"So you're telling me you're not a scientist?"
he asked, shaking his head.
"There are many sciences, Mr. Kaufman, and many PhDs. I am a doctor of botany, Ikak Levitsky, PhD. Some might read that as doctor of medicine, doctor of philosophy, perhaps even doctor of science, specialist in weapons technology. Why? Why not? Sounds very prestigious. Would allow a man certain privilege.
The Rebbe stopped, turned back to face him.
You see, Mr. Kaufman, Dor Mittelbau required science, and Auschwitz required death.
Kaufman rubbed a knot out of his neck.
So you pretended to be a rocket scientist, and the Nazis sent you to Dor Mittelbau.
And then your benevolent army sent me to Columbia University.
To work on missiles.
The Rebbe smacked his lips, then gazed up into a canopy of rippling leaves.
I think that will be enough for now, Mr. Kaufman.
Kaufman wandered the woods aimlessly. Why? Why not?
Can I do something? A project? Anything?
He had come to the pond. The colonel was resting against a stump, puffing an El Producto.
You know, Yeshiva!
He removed the stogie from his mouth, knocked an ash to the dirt.
I tried to get as far away from this fucking war as I could. And you dumped it right back in my lap. Didn't mean to, babe. Sorry. Don't go feeling sorry for me. I got enough pity to blanket a whole platoon. Just don't want to talk to the Jew. Don't want to hear his story. Don't even want to see him. You do what you gotta do. Let me be.
It wasn't surprising to see the colonel drinking again. Kaufman would be nursing the bottle, too, if only he could. He looked out over the pond. The water was calm. At least peace existed somewhere.
If you don't mind, Rebbe, I was thinking about the war.
Kaufman couldn't keep away. Fortunately, the Rebbe seemed available once again. He was seated on a large stone, his face framed in a window of sun.
About fighting Germans, Japs, killing people, about all the evil.
What is this evil?
What?
Kaufman held up his hands.
It's not evil. To kill millions of Jews isn't evil.
Good, evil, right, wrong. Where do you wish to put your attention?
He maneuvered his face to follow the patch of light. Kaufman clenched his fists.
I say it's wrong.
The Rebbe began to applaud.
Yes, well, now you are righteous. You are angry. How mighty you have become!
He lifted a tree limb from the ground, got up and swung it like a sword.
You are ready to fight! Kill the Nazis!
Kaufman ducked out of the way.
How is that different from kill the Jews?
The Rebbe poked the end of the branch into Kaufman's chest.
Where are you? Here? What is here?
He gave an extra poke, then let the stick drop, placed his hands over his own heart.
God is inside. This is my belief. But if by evil you mean man's infinite capacity to inflict harm on his fellow man, then that is inside as well. This I know as fact.
He settled back against a sturdy maple.
There is a deck of cards, Mr. Kaufman, and we are all dealt from this deck. Events, circumstances, obstacles, are we dealt fairly?
He held up a finger to silence Kaufman before he could answer.
Sometimes we are able to rise and meet obstacles. Sometimes not. Sometimes the obstacles are so great that we are powerless. So powerless, we may even lose our souls. Is there nothing, then, that can exist inside to arise? Because if I scream, if I wail, if I am crushed, I am nowhere. I am mine own enemy. How can I help anything?
He tilted his head slightly to the side.
People died in the camps. Many people. Entire families. That was the purpose of Auschwitz. To create death. At Dora Mittelbau, we created missiles. While we died. The V-2. Some of us felt that we could be of assistance if, perhaps, we slowed down production. Tamper with one small element, one part, that without its functioning, the weapon would be rendered useless. This we managed to accomplish. Sabotage. Sabotage by men who were starving, who had no muscle on their bones. Of course, the Nazis found out. On March 11th, and this was little more than 2 months ago. Imagine.
Kaufman couldn't imagine. 2 months ago he was awash in a drunken stupor.
On March 11th,
the Rebbe continued,
the Nazis hung 200 prisoners, some who had not even participated in this tiny resistance. They erected gallows in the middle of the tunnel, our factory, and they hung the suspects in pairs, their hands tied neatly behind their backs, a piece of wood stuffed into each mouth. They hung every one of them. They made the rest of us line up and walk through the tunnel. The bodies... 200 bodies hanging over our heads. And then we went back to work, and there was no more resistance. A few weeks later, the Nazis began the evacuation. Production stopped. Prisoners began to vanish. It seemed the Allies were on their way. That is when Pyotr and I decided that our best chance was to hide inside the tunnel.
Kaufman got down on his good knee.
And you say there is no evil?
He could still feel the stick stabbing in his chest. The Rebbe ran his pale thin fingertips across his mouth.
If millions of Jews had given their lives in battle, would you object to that?
He reached up and plucked a leaf pierced with holes.
Is this leaf unfortunate to have become food for beetles?
He asked simply. Kaufman stood, brushed off his trouser leg.
You can talk. You survived. At what cost, Mr. Kaufman? What survives? Nazis were not the only ones to act despicably. Though it was certainly their design. Prisoners worked for the Nazis, behaved as Nazis, to survive. But, of course, most did not. And now...
He tore the leaf into tiny pieces and sprinkled it over the earth.
Perhaps they will make for fertile soil, and something new will grow.
He smiled, but it was an empty smile.
I try to save myself. Yes, I also tried to save my wife. And one other I almost did save. One other unfortunate. We escaped Auschwitz. We even survived Dora Mittelbau. And then this one, the only other one whom I was able to save, died at the hands of another unfortunate, an American, a soldier. Patrick Walsh.
Kaufman folded in on himself.
Patrick Walsh killed a prisoner?
He asked numbly. The Rebbe didn't answer. He didn't even look at him. He just remained silent for what seemed like an eternity, and then calmly resumed his tutorial.
Why are we here? Time is limited. Why not use it? Create something noble, something remarkable, something good out of ourselves. Dare to arise.
You dared, didn't you?
To fail, even, is a worthy effort.
His eyes flashed on Kaufman's for a moment, then returned to the ground. Kaufman swallowed.
And yesterday you were about to gas yourself.
Who said it was easy?
Again he directed his gaze upon Kaufman, but this time he didn't shift.
Every man has his dark night, in some form or another. Auschwitz, Dora Mittelbau, or simply the natural death. We are all betrayed, debased, the glory of existence taken away. We are all crucified, and we all hope for resurrection.
The Rebbe's mouth grew thin. He closed his eyes.
Not to be born again into some other life. Perhaps it could be, but why is that of any concern? It eliminates the present, invites excuses, bargains. No, to be born again in this life, in this moment, now.
He leaned over, once again fixed on the growth beneath his feet.
What if all this has been for you? What if even my life has been for you? The death of my friend, the soldier Walsh, your own suffering. What if everything you have experienced has been to bring you to this moment? If you take responsibility for yourself, if you strive for perfection in this lifetime, what might be possible? Otherwise, what are you here for? You contribute nothing. You are nothing. This tree provides more of a service.
He placed his hand on the fissured bark beside him and let his fingers run along the grooves.
But it has no choice.
The Rebbe stood up and became still.
We could have a choice, Mr. Kaufman, but are we aware of that? Or do we just let it all happen?
He turned and wandered away, leaving Kaufman alone in the woods. Behind Kaufman was a towering pine. He pressed his back against the sturdy trunk. Looking up, he could see the top branches swaying in the breeze, speckled with sunlight. He reached overhead and grabbed hold of a lower bough, dangled for a moment, and let his spine stretch out. And then he began to climb. He wound his way upwards, scaling the outreaching limbs one at a time, arms and legs in fluid counterpoint. The last tree he conquered was in Touro Park, and he was what, 12? He was a good 30 feet above ground before he came to a stop. He rested on a lightly bobbing limb, took off his hat, and let it fall. It flipped down, glancing off the branches, and tumbled to the ground, rolling in a circle along its brim before coming to rest. The sun was low in the sky and bathed the forest in a wash of scarlet. He wasn't quite above the tree line, but the view was unimpeded for a few hundred yards. He could spot the colonel's home some distance to the south, and due east, the pond. Beside the pond sat the colonel, and beside the colonel, the Rebbe. And they seemed to be sharing a cigar. Chapter 67.
You were talking with the Rebbe? Didn't speak much. Why? You getting proprietary? No, it's just...
Kaufman looked out at the pond. The heron was back.
Go on, the colonel said. Take a plunge.
He picked up a stone and skipped it across the surface of the water. A frog sprung off the bank and swiftly paddled away. The heron didn't move. The colonel rose, rubbed his face between his hands.
I'm going back to the shack. Dinner at 1800.
Before he left, he emptied his bottle onto the ground. Kaufman didn't say a word. He stood silently for a few more minutes, then stripped off his clothes and dove in.
And barbecue.
The colonel manned the grill. The Rebbe was setting the table.
Need anything?
Kaufman asked, cracking his knuckles.
Nah, all under control, yeshiva.
The Rebbe lifted the pitcher, peered inside.
Perhaps we could have some fresh water, Moses.
Kaufman took the pitcher. What had prompted the Rebbe to suddenly switch from calling him Mr. Kaufman to Moses? Maybe progress was being made after all. The Rebbe and Kaufman both ate in silence. The colonel filled the vacuum, holding forth on the failure of post-war reparations. At one point, the Rebbe laid down a chicken leg, licked his fingers, and mercifully interrupted.
I agree, Colonel Suick. Reparations must be made. But still, it will not be easy.
What won't be easy? Asked Kaufman.
Why, the antidote, answered the Rebbe. Peace. Peace will not be easy. It never is.
I'd fight for peace.
The colonel took a chunk of white meat and dipped it in the sticky goo, stuffed it in his mouth.
What about you, yeshiva?
Kaufman took a slug of water.
War to end war, he said. Fight to stop fighting. Is that the way it works, Rebbe?
You tell me.
The Rebbe glanced at him coolly from the corner of his eye.
You are the fighter. I am only a survivor.
No, you're more than a survivor.
Kaufman wiped his mouth.
And I'm not much of a fighter.
The colonel snorted.
Could have had me fooled.
Even the Rebbe seemed amused.
You are not a fighter. That is such an interesting statement, Moses. And what, may I ask, do you do for a living except fight? You live to fight, to face an enemy, wage war. You seek one conflict after another, it absorbs you. Am I correct?
He didn't wait for a reply.
Of course it does. And the battles never end. How convenient, then, that the real war remains hidden.
This instant vivisection was all the more excruciating for taking place in front of the colonel. Hoffman looked for an escape, but there wasn't any.
Real war?
He asked defensively.
What war is that?
The Rebbe took his index finger and poked Kaufman in the sternum.
The one within.
The colonel coughed up a wad of phlegm, spit it out into the brush, and began clearing the table.
Well, we all got that battle going on,
he mumbled and beat a hasty retreat. The Rebbe placed his palm on Kaufman's chest. Warmth seemed to radiate from his hand. A small hand, almost like a little girl's. He leaned in close.
But war only begets war. Peace begets peace. How to have peace in there, my dear Moses?
He removed his tiny hand and let it slowly rise into the air.
And yet engage in the battle out here.
Kaufman was lost. His pulse was pounding, and he had the strange sensation that the Rebbe's hand was still pressing on him.
You're never really talking about what you're talking about, are you?
He asked. The Rebbe nodded.
Perhaps I am always talking about what I am talking about. What are you talking about when you are talking?
I don't know. Right now, I don't know anything.
Bravo!
The Rebbe smacked his hands together.
Now we can talk. Together, we know less than nothing.
Kaufman laughed.
The botanist who works on missiles knows nothing.
The Rebbe's eyes crinkled.
Absolutely nothing. But it is knowing that I know nothing that has enabled me to fool the people who think they know something.
Like at the missile factory.
Precisely.
And Columbia. Guess that got you out of the displacement camps.
The smile dropped from the Rebbe's face.
Let me ask you something, Moses. If we were treating a virus, a disease, you and I, what would happen if we were to administer the wrong dose?
Treating what?
It doesn't matter. Anything. Malaria, typhoid, yellow fever.
What kind of dose? How much? How often?
Ah,
the Rebbe lit up.
So now the question is one of scale. So, perhaps the aim is to administer the dosage that is necessary for the treatment, yes?
I guess so.
There is no guessing here.
Okay, the dose that fits the treatment.
Or what?
Or the patient becomes worse.
You are asking me? How would I know? I know nothing.
Sure, the patient would become worse. That's why they call it an overdose. That's why...
Thank you, Professor. Thank you. And even in warfare, if you were to fight with more than what is necessary, what would the outcome be?
You sure take a roundabout way.
The Rebbe shrugged.
The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. But... that path is not very interesting.
The Rebbe tugged at his shirt sleeve, pulling it down below the tattoo.
So, what would be the consequence of an overdose in war?
Kaufman rested his chin in his hand.
More war. Something worse.
So, if you plan to end war by creating a weapon more powerful than anything known to man, which would destroy hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of lives, that would perhaps be somewhat unnecessary, even if it ended the war. But we defeated Germany, mano a mano. It's over. It is not over. Right, yeah, there's still the Pacific, but it is not over.
The Rebbe remained focused on Kaufman while he reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out a cigar, one of the colonel's. He lit it with a safety match and inhaled slowly, blew smoke rings into the trees. Kaufman leaned across the table. He picked a patch of paint off the enameled surface, pursed his lips.
So, you were in the tunnel when the Allies arrived, and Walsh and Glenn came in and found you and your friend, Piotr. Piotr Bekont. Piotr, he was also a scientist?
He was a doctor of philosophy. We had been hiding in that tunnel for a week. 2 years together in the camps. Auschwitz, then Dora.
The Nazis were merciless.
Not just the Nazis.
He glanced back at Kaufman.
What do you want, Moses?
What do I want? You know what I want, Rebbe. I want to know about the tunnel. I want to know what happened in there.
That is all you want?
That's it.
That is what you really want?
Kaufman was exhausted. He watched the Rebbe relishing his smoke.
To tell you the truth, Rebbe,
he said,
what I really want is just to finish this goddamn job and get drunk.
The Rebbe flicked an ash off with his fingertip.
Well, then, please, do not let me hinder you any longer.
He put out his cigar and pocketed the remainder.
You wish to know what happened in the tunnel, yes?
Kaufman froze for a moment.
Yes, yes, that's, yes.
So,
the Rebbe began flatly,
it was hard to believe the Nazis could be defeated. But we heard reports, could feel something in the air. When the soldier entered the tunnel, though, we did not know he was American. We did not know who he was. There was a beam of light crossing back and forth. A flashlight. Then he called out, "Is anybody there?" In English. He spoke English. But we were still afraid. It had been so long. We didn't know what to do, how to act. So, when the light fell upon us, we stepped forward with our hands raised in surrender, like this.
He raised his hands in the air.
And the light landed on us. And then we heard laughter. The soldier, he began to laugh. And as he came forward, we saw his army uniform, U.S., his field helmet. And he removed the field helmet and rubbed his hand over the top of his large head, and he spoke to us. "You miserable Jews," he said, "dirty, stinking Jews, this is what we are fighting for, to save some rotten, stinking Jews." And then Piotr, my friend, picked up a shovel from the ground, and he swung the shovel at the soldier, and it hit him on that large head of his.
Kaufman's face went slack.
Piotr cracked Walsh's skull?
Most efficiently, yes,
continued the Rebbe,
but unfortunately did not render him unconscious. The soldier Walsh staggered away and began to curse. Then he moved forward and he placed his hands on Piotr's chest and he shoved him into the tunnel wall and he continued to press against him until I could hear ribs snapping.
Kaufman's throat constricted.
Walsh killed him. Our bones had become very brittle in the camps, whether it was Piotr's ribs or his spine or both, I could not say. But he remained stuck to the rock wall, even as the soldier stepped back. When I put my hand on Piotr's shoulder, he collapsed, like a balloon with all the air escaping. I was on the ground holding his body in my arms when the other soldier came in. Glenn. He was running, also with flashlight, and he stopped some distance away and asked what had happened. There was fear in his voice. Perhaps he did not want to know.
Kaufman could understand that. Now he didn't want to know either. The Rebbe took a deep breath.
I could no longer speak, but the soldier, Walsh, began to curse again, and he pointed to dead Piotr and accused him of trying to murder him. The light scanned across the tunnel and fell on me. I slowly shook my head.
You never told anyone what happened in the tunnel?
Never. Until today.
And you told me?
Yes, I told you.
He raised his brow.
Why? Why not?
Kaufman remembered the corporal's description at the camp. Two soldiers came out of the tunnel along with one prisoner, and inside was one other prisoner, and he was dead. That was Piotr, dead at the hands of Private First Class Patrick Walsh. Kaufman felt his own ribs caving in.
Piotr fought back. He fought back. There's your real hero, a warrior Jew. He stood up. He tried to defend himself.
The Rebbe smiled and looked at Kaufman as if looking at a flower.
No, Piotr Bikont was not defending himself, my dear Moses. And he was not a Jew.
Kaufman looked side to side, down at his knees, up at the sky. The moon was almost full, slowly gliding above the trees.
At least he tried to defend our people.
Our people?
The Rebbe glared.
What people is that? The chosen people? Either everyone is chosen or no one. There is no our people, us and them. There is only people. Maybe Piotr was defending people, but even at that, he failed.
Kaufman had his fill of the tunnel. This was an overdose.
You can't blame your friend for fighting.
Blame him?
The Rebbe suddenly looked stricken. The fury subsided.
Do I sound like I blame him? I am sorry. Blame him? No, never. Never. Piotr was my brother. He kept me alive. No, I do not blame him. It was a natural reaction, a defensible reaction. But it was not a conscious action.
He paused and wiped his eyes.
The question, Moses, is not only about when to fight. It is about how to fight. To have the choice. Consciously. One must ask, where was Piotr when he swung that shovel?
Where was he?
Kaufman threw up his hands.
He was in the damn tunnel.
How can you be so sure?
The Rebbe's eyes were sad, kind, but sad. Kaufman heard a howl off in the woods, similar to what he'd heard during his last stay, but louder, more pained, and possibly nearer.
We should go inside, Rebbe.
Why?
Asked the Rebbe dryly.
There's something out there. Wolf, coyote. I don't know, but it's out there.
Kaufman got up, took the Rebbe by the sleeve. The Rebbe remained seated.
There is always something out there. What is right here?
He pointed to his heart. Another howl. Kaufman tugged gently.
I'm serious, Rebbe.
The Rebbe looked up at him, and kept looking at him, even as a distant rustle sounded from behind the trees, and a throaty growl. Kaufman spun around, crouched, and looked for something to grab hold of. One of the axes was nearby. He took a step.
And I am serious as well.
The Rebbe was standing now. He waved Kaufman back, walked towards the forest, stopped. A snarl. Kaufman could see the glint of eyes in the brush.
Rebbe,
he warned. But the Rebbe stood still. Another snarl, and a moment later, creeping low, the animal appeared. Smaller than what Kaufman expected, ribs showing, but its teeth were bared and its snout furrowed. The Rebbe slowly lifted up one hand and turned it palm out to the animal. Kaufman began to stretch for the axe. It was almost within reach. And then the coyote sniffed twice, turned, and loped back into the woods. The Rebbe kept watch, even after the animal disappeared.
You still think the antidote to war is war?
That was a dangerous game, Rebbe.
It is no game. Awareness is everything.
The Rebbe turned his gaze to him.
Inside, outside, above, below. A tree has roots, but roots are only one part, and their job is to reach down. Branches, they must reach up. Balance is necessary.
He paused.
From there, you can take action. From presence.
Some beasts aren't just going to sniff and walk away, said Kaufman sullenly.
The Rebbe nodded several times.
Yes, but in that case, the choice is, how do you wish to die?
Chapter 68.
Kaufman didn't need another night tossing and turning on the couch, but that's what he got. For some reason, he kept flashing on Moses, the real one, the one that tormented him since Sunday school. Kaufman tried to turn the page, but the images wouldn't let up. The burning bush, the golden calf. And didn't Moses smash the tablets and kill the Jews who worshipped that calf, and then make a second set of commandments? What kind of balance is that? He finally dozed off sometime near morning, with the patriarch continuing to permeate his dreams. But the visage began to blur, and the linen robe became a blue serge suit. It was no longer the prophet Moses, standing atop Mount Nebo, watching as the sons of Israel made their final passage across the River Jordan to the land of Canaan. It was number 65,412. It was Yitzhak Levitsky. Thank you.
Where's the Rebbe?
Kaufman shuffled into the kitchen, put some water on for tea.
Had an early breakfast, went for a stroll.
The colonel poured himself another cup of coffee.
Oh, and he asked me to apologize to you for not saving any omelet. Wasn't enough to go around. No problem there. Did you get any? Nah, not enough for me neither. But I hate mushrooms.
A hollow formed in Kaufman's chest, almost doubled him over. He could hear the kettle screaming as he tore from the house. Like an Olympian, he wove through the trees, racing madly toward the pond. His knees swelled, but he kept going.
Rebbe!
He shouted, and kept shouting until he had hardly any voice left. The Rebbe lay on the ground, writhing, vomit smeared over his jacket lapel. His words were choked.
I did not expect it to be quite so difficult.
Kaufman scooped him up in his arms.
What can I do?
Nothing. It is already done.
The Rebbe's eyes were clear, even as his body jerked and spasmed. Kaufman's face screwed up.
Is this what it comes to? Is this the answer?
It is my answer.
He wanted to throw him down, bash his head against a stone.
My answer? What is that?
The question, Moses, is not what is the answer. The question is, what is your answer? For you, for the totality of you. This is my answer, mine alone. It is not for you to know.
God damn it!
Kaufman swung his eyes away.
You beckon God. What? To save me? Some heavenly intervention? A parting of the clouds? Chorus of angels? What if God is only a witness? Like plants, like the water. What if only man can intervene?
Kaufman laid the Rebbe back down, knelt in the dirt beside him.
You can't die. You can't die because of what happened, because of Germany.
Ah.
He half laughed.
But it is not the past. It is the future I choose not to face.
I am the future, Rebbe. Me, Moses Kaufman. I need...
What do you need? Everything is here.
He looked up at the sky, over to the pond, and back. He held Kaufman's gaze.
It is all around you.
Kaufman swallowed.
Please, let me help. An antidote. There has to be an antidote.
The Rebbe's body had become less convulsive. He wiped his mouth with the back of his cuff.
Help me, yes. Save me, no.
Here, it is important to be vertical. Remember, roots below, branches.
He raised an arm limply, and Kaufman propped him up against a tree stump.
Yes, yes, good. Now, there is one thing.
The Rebbe's voice was becoming fainter.
One way. We can always help. Simple, though unpopular.
Kaufman placed a hand on the back of the Rebbe's head, stroked his silvered hair.
Whatever it is, Rebbe, whatever it is.
The Rebbe's breathing was labored.
for the war. The war inside.
He bobbed his head, squinted at Kaufman.
What is the antidote?
Kaufman squinted back.
For the war inside.
The Rebbe hunched his shoulders.
Inside, outside. What can you bring?
Kaufman breathed deeply. He knew what the Rebbe was asking.
Peace. You're talking about peace, aren't you?
Ah, now perhaps we understand each other.
A ray of warmth flooded from the Rebbe's eyes.
Do you think you could administer this antidote, my dear Moses?
I could try.
The Rebbe smiled.
Who could ask for more?
And Kaufman sat beside him, and he became absolutely still. Afraid that's it for episode 11, chapters 66 to 68. And yeah, I know. Just when you were starting to grow fond of the Rebbe. Well, that's the way the cookie crumbles here on Sunday Night Noir. And we still got a ways to go with A Beacon of Light, part 3. Of Kaufman's Holiday. So brace up. Remember, all this sadness is brought to you courtesy of Radio Free Brooklyn. But if you'd like to give your spirits a lift, and theirs too, why don't you try making a donation? Go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. And if you want to really feel swell, how about sponsoring a program? Yeah, like Kaufman's Holiday. I bet the Rebbe would approve. Once again, special thanks to Chris Durian for our theme song, Case Closed, featuring Brian Schwartz on trumpet and Sang-hee Cho on piano. It's closing out the show right now if you want to keep listening. And to my dear old friend Arthur Rosen for those hep piano improvisations that wind their way throughout this saga. His Music for Rabbis will cap off this episode if you stick around to the end here. But for me, it's time to roll. Thinking about having some mushroom soup. This is Matt Mittler signing off. But you know I'll be back. You'll hear me coming. My floor chimes clacking on the cobblestones.